I remember going over to watch the Lions in New Zealand, and it was his second tour after the Australian tour with the Lions, Mikes. And we were in Waikato, and we were watching the game, and Mike was playing. And after the game, there was a few celebrations, and the Lions lost against Waikato. And we were in the bars afterwards, and there was a few supporters there that are, I term them as the Hooray Henrys of the brigade that come out of the big city. And they said, talking to us, and they said about where are we from, and we said, oh, from Gloucester, King's Home. And Mike Teague's here, you know, he's over there, aren't you going to go and talk to him? And one of the boys said, well, you tell him, Viv. And I said, well, excuse me, I said, but, you know, Mike Teague lives approximately 200 metres away from my house, and so I've come all the way to New Zealand to go and talk to him. I've come to see New Zealand, and they just couldn't believe it. And I told Mike the story afterwards, and but a great ambassador for Gloucester Rugby Club. Absolutely fantastic. And all of them have, every player, it's a family. And we went on a tour to America, and I think, you know, we'd done some fundraising. There was a big party that went. I think it was one of the first major tours Gloucester endeavoured on. We went over to Chicago, up to Battle Creek, Michigan, over to Illinois, the car race, the Indy car race. And we trained every day, and we just couldn't believe it. John Watkins used to make us get up and train, and sometimes we were hosted out. And we often used to say to Gilly, you know, why are we training every day, Gilly? You know, let's have a bit of a rest time, you know? No, we're training. And then at the end of the tour, the last game was against Chicago Lions in Chicago. And apparently this was going to be the real test for us. And luckily we won it, and we came away and had a very successful tour. I think we played 6 games and won 6. And that evening, I remember sitting with Gilly, and Gilly used to pretend to smoke. Gilly was a prop in his local days down in Gordon League before he came to King's Home. And Gilly used to pretend to smoke, and he always used to scrounge cigarettes off people and just hold them in his two fingers and put them to his mouth and then blow out fresh air. Never light a cigarette at all, but it was one of his party tricks. And I said to him, Gilly, I said, look, the tour's finished now, you know, we've got one more day, you're not going to make us train tomorrow, are you? He said, yeah, we might as well. He said, the reason we're doing it, Viv, he said, because we're representing the city, and Gloucester is a representative of the country, and that's why we're doing it. And then it came home to you then as a player, you know, what it meant to put a cherry and white on to certain people. And I feel the same, and I still, you know, remember those days, you know, putting the shirt on and coming out in front of the shed, and, you know, being quite emotional, because you just didn't want to let anybody down. You didn't want to let your family down and all the people in the shed. And sometimes I used to think, well, am I good enough to wear it? But I used to trust the people that selected me to hope that I was good enough to wear it.
You were predominantly local lads playing for Gloucester. There were one or two people like Simonette, and Nick Marmond is another example of people from outside. But your playing career finished in 82, 83. And then you left Gloucester. What happened then? I mean, what did you? How did you stay in rugby?
Yeah, it was around about 82, and my injury to my knee, I just couldn't put in the work rate that was required to keep a cherry and rice on. And I went back and skippered Gloucester Old Boys for a season, and I think I remember it was either that first year or the second year back at Gloucester Old Boys. I started doing some coaching at a junior level. And Gloucester Old Boys ran an under 17 side in previous years. And I started just delving into coaching because I couldn't really match up to the rugby, from my expectations anyway. And there was two things I remember. I remember coming back and actually playing a couple of games. because obviously the county was still in Gloucester at the time, was 10, 12 or more players in the county side. And so the Gloucester were always short and used to call on some local players to come. And obviously because of my affiliation with Gloucester, Gloucester Old Boys actually played 7 players in a Gloucester game. At King's Home, and it was on a county day, and I don't know if it was a record of players coming from one club at the same time, and it was like John Brain in the second row, John Gadd, myself, Steve Baker, Paul Ford, Russ Ellis, Conrad Gadd, which is John Gadd's brother, played in the centre, and I think there was 7 of us played against Harlequins here, and actually won on a county day against Harlequins, and so that's where I went to, and I just started taking up the coaching mantle, and I went and did a couple of exams.
Just to establish that game, I mean, the note I have is that you played your last game, in effect, in Gloucester shirt, was against Harlequins, 9th of October 1982. Would that have been the game?
That could well have been the game, yes. Could well have been the game.
Would that have been your last game, do you think, in the colours, as it were?
It could well have been. It could well have been. In my dreams, I'd probably played more, but but I think you could be right. It would have been around that time.
Yeah.
Yes.
Our statistician is never wrong.
No. He would tell you.
Rarely wrong.
Yeah, that's right. I started doing my coaching badges then, and my first coaching role actually was at Treadworth Rugby Club, because I just felt that because I was part of Gloucester Old Boys, I didn't want to wanted to test yourself, and Russ Hillier was one of the coaching staff people at the time, so I did some exams at Stroud, and luckily passed, and I took on a coaching role at Treadworth under Reg Daldry, who was the hooker at the time there, who was a friend, and had a season there. And then I went back to Gloucester Old Boys as a coach. And luckily, you know, there were some very good players there at the time. You know, the likes of the two Baldwin brothers, Paul Ford was there, Russ Ellis was there, Pete Wickenden was there, Stevie Baker was there. And then they just moved on and were very, very successful for about 3 or 4 seasons, and we were playing Lydney in a county cup, I think semi-final if I remember rightly, down at Lydney, and looked over on the touchline, and there was some Gloucester representatives there, and one of them was Barry Corliss. And nobody took much notice, and obviously we just thought, well, they must be come to see one or two of the players.
Barry Corliss in those days was associated with Northampton.
At the time, yes. Yeah, and just before he was going to come to King's Home, that nobody obviously knew about. And Gloucester Old Boys won the game, and everybody thought they'd come to watch players, etc. And then later on, I can't really remember, I'm pretty sure it was around about that time after that game, I was approached to attend a meeting at King's Home about coaching ethic, and Keith Richardson had been the coach previous to that, and for whatever reasons had left the club, so I came to King's Home for a meeting. And it was to offer me the first team coaching role that I was totally shocked with, it, I must admit, because I just thought I was just a little local coach, nowhere near good enough for this elk, but let's give it a go. I was talked in.
Who are you talking to in those days?
It was Barry Corliss.
It was Barry Corliss?
It was Barry Corliss then, yeah, okay. Who was the head honcho for technical advisor or technical manager to Gloucester Rugby Club at the time.
Had you realised he'd been appointed to that role?
Not at the time, no, not at the time, because this was still at the end of the season. And Then pre-season had started at King's Home. And I came down, I was introduced to the players alongside Barry Corliss, introduced by Alan Brin, who was the chairman at the time of the committee. And then we went from there, really. And the very first training session, we trained up at Plot Court, and then I started to get Barry to get to know him a bit. But we used to still train twice a week, all it was.
But he'd been appointed by the club as technical director. What was his role, did you understand it?
I understood his role to be head coach.
Yeah.
And head manager, and I was just to be a sort of coach of the first 15.
Yes.
The press described you, I think, the two of you, as director of rugby and coach in the very much in the modern parlance.
That may not
have been accurate.
Knowing
the press.
Yeah, the terminology would be right, and I think that if you look back, it was that. Barry Corliss was the director of rugby and Viv Woolley was the coach.
Yeah.
And Andy Deacon was the skipper then, the prop. Hence the affiliation with props, with Mickey Burton and Robin Cowlin and Mike Fry and other people like that. And then it was just this change over a period, this transition into the professionalism. And
just before we get on to that, can I just be clear? You were a forward, so were you a forwards coach, or was there a backs coach as well, or were you in charge of both elements?
I was in charge overall, yes, of both elements, but Barry Corliss used to run the backs training sessions, and I used to run the forwards.